baseball, Blue Jays, and more baseball. It's the walk-off with Scott Belford and Adam Mack.
This ball is crushed.
The Die Hard Podcast for the casual fan.
And another one. My goodness.
Good morning. It is Tuesday, which means Monday morning mailbag. Welcome to the walk-off, everybody. I'm Scott Belford. Joined, as always, by the best co-host in the biz, Adam Mack. Sir, you have combed through all of the comments and interactions from the last week, and we've got quite a few to get to, it looks like.
Yeah, I would say I have all of the best ones, but I do not have nearly all of the best ones. There are some really good comments out there, and we're just...
Yeah.
We can't spend 3 hours every morning doing this, but we do appreciate the comments, and yeah, it's been great. The DMs Instagram, yeah, and Discord have been phenomenal, so...
And that is how you would get a hold of us. So feel free to follow us on Twitter at Walk Off Podcast. You can do so on Instagram, the Walk Off Podcast. Of course, our Discord is free and always will be. And you can join that by going to the show notes and signing up there. And you can DM us anytime. We're always, the DMs are open, and we try to get to as many of them as we possibly can. So that is how you reach out to us here on the Walk Off. Let's get into it. Oh, okay. I guess we should
shout out Patreon.
Yes.
Appreciate everybody supporting us on Patreon. So we're down this month. So somebody's Patreon expired and they did not renew it. But that's probably because I accidentally deleted our March movie review, A League of Their Own. I'm embarrassed to say I didn't do it. Or that we did record it. We spent an hour and a half recording that episode and then I deleted it like a idiot one day. But to our six remaining Patreons, John, Simon, Rashid, Joshua, Jeremy, and Ian, thank you so much for supporting us on Patreon. You might not have A League of Their Own up, and we might not have Moneyball up yet for April either, but we are recording Moneyball this Thursday. So if you're getting your Monday morning mailbag on a Tuesday, you're getting your April movie review on May the 4th. So get used to it. No, we do appreciate the support. We are also doing behind the scenes nonsense as well. So that goes up the 20 minutes or so that Scott and I spend kind of getting the show ready before we go live here. Just kind of catching up with each other, talking about the Canadian comedy industry and the business that the two of us have found ourselves in. Today was a pretty good episode, I think, if I do say so myself, as far as the pre-show goes. If I was a fan of you and I, and I'm not going to say that there's many of them, I'd be interested in tuning in today, because it was a pretty decent one.
Yes.
All right, let's get to it. So first one comes in from a comment on the Monday re-release of Sunday Night's Long Toss. Man, we've got our schedule totally as simple as it could be, don't we?
It's hilarious.
So Josh,
before you even get to this comment, just so everybody is aware, we do Long Toss live every single Sunday, where we bring in all sorts of content creators from not just Blue Jays land, but the MLB in general. We talk and focus on the Blue Jays, but we normally delve in to the MLB in general by the last half. 6 Eastern till 8 Eastern, live every Sunday. But we also re-release it Monday morning. And I know we were getting some comments Monday morning like we were live. And just so everyone's not confused, we weren't ignoring everyone on YouTube. We just were not there. But there. Yes.
Good distinction.
Smooth that.
Good distinction. So a couple that were asked on the Monday airing of the episode. I happened to be hanging out in the premiere Monday morning. So I did respond to these folks and I let them know, look, we're not live, but we'll get to it on the Monday morning mailbag just because. So here we are. So Joshua Poor asks, given Kirk's improved defensive abilities and framing, would you favor starting him over Danny Jansen when he comes back? And if you had to move one, who would you rather move at the trade deadline, Alejandro Kirk or Danny Jansen? Scott?
So I do want to start with we had Danny Jansen on the show. Very exciting for us here on the walk-off, obviously, and just our listeners in general. And I do wish to make sure that everyone understands my answer has nothing to do with that. I'm not being biased here. I absolutely still go with Danny Jansen as
okay,
the starting
catcher. I was going to say Danny rubbed you the wrong way when we talked to him, and you're like, let's get him out of here. Okay.
Yeah.
That's good.
No, and it has nothing to do with the fact that he sat down with us. It's just the catching position is a position, we've talked about this so many times, right? It is a position that requires so much major league experience to be at the top of your game. And Danny Jansen has put in the time. He's been with this team since 2018. He's finally at the point where we're seeing some production out of his bat. We're watching what a masterful guy he is with the pitching staff. He's been fantastic. Every pitcher you talk to raves about Danny Jansen. So I think we go with Danny Jansen. I love that Kirk has stepped in so admirably over the last 3 weeks. I think he has been great. His framing has been fantastic. He's looking the best defensively he ever has, which is great for the trade deadline. I don't necessarily wish to see Kirk moved, but they're going to need to move something. Just a reminder, catching is probably the point of the position with the most depth currently on this Toronto Blue Jays team and organization. Gabriel Moreno is knocking at the door. Zach Collins has looked very good. So when Danny Jansen comes back, all of a sudden, you know, Heinemann's gone. Mm-hmm. Are they still going to carry three catchers? We'll see. These are all questions that will just work themselves out. But personally, I think Danny Jansen is the number one. Where are you at, man?
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I mean, I think that major league hitting in general is something that is kind of if all goes according to plan, a two steps forward, one step back kind of progress with the development there. So I don't necessarily believe that Kirk is just going to be like a really good hitter from here on out. Like, he's going to have kinks to work out.
Yeah.
Adjustments to be made, because that's that's kind of the beauty of the art form when you do get called up, right? Is a hitter comes up and he's hot, and pitchers don't know how to pitch to him yet, right? Mm-hmm. And then they figure out how to pitch to him. Oh, he can't hit that high heat, or oh, he can't stay off that slider down and away, whatever the case, right? Then the batter needs to make an adjustment, and then the pitchers need to make another adjustment, right? And this is kind of how it goes. And I do feel like Danny has spent the last 4 or 5 years, or however many years he's at now, making those adjustments. And Kirk yes. has a bunch of figuring it out and adjusting and figuring it out and adjusting. A lot of growing pains in that process.
Because he's 22.
Exactly. So I just mean, like, as far as a team who wants to be a legitimate World Series contender, I would rather take the guy who maybe has a lower ceiling, but is further along in the career adjustments and working out the kinks. So
exactly. Well,
I also think that defensively his ceiling is a lot higher as well. So yeah, for me, it's still Danny Jansen. And then on top of it, like, I think what you get in return for Alejandro Kirk is going to be a lot more than what you're going to get in return for Danny Jansen. Cause I think anybody interested in Danny Jansen is someone who's contending right now. Mm-hmm. And if you're contending right now, you're not going to give up a piece that helps you win right now. So for that reason, if nothing else, is enough reason for me to say, let's stick with Danny Jansen.
And this is not slander on Kirk, by the way. Like, he has been great since filling in.
Hey, look, I am happy to slander Kirk and to talk him down. But today I'm not doing that. This particular conversation, I think, has been fine. But I still think that the best way he can help this team win is by converting into a starting pitcher. So either he learns to pitch or he gets traded to pitch. So
yes.
All right, let's move on now. Next one, again, from the Sunday Night Long Toss. Great chat, everyone. Looking ahead a bit, what is the dream deadline acquisition? I think we need another middle-of-the-order bat.
Do you want my answer first, or do you want to jump in here?
For me, it is only starting pitching. Okay. And then health.
I want the Minnesota Twins to fall out of it and them get Carlos Correa at the deadline. Oh, is that insane?
Wow.
Think about how good defensively this infield becomes if all of a sudden Bo moves to second base and Carlos Correa is playing shortstop.
That is a hot take. Move Bo to second.
And
there's a lot of unpack there, Scott.
You can move him back, right? Like, this is the thing. Carlos Correa is going to be a free agent again at the end of this season. I know that the Twins technically have him for 3 years, but he opts out. He's got two opt-outs, this year and one after. Like, he's going to be a free agent.
Yeah.
Especially with the shortstop class being far less deep than it was last year. So if the Twins fall out of it, which is a big if, especially with the expanded playoffs and the fact that they are currently at the top of that god-awful Central Division. that's my dream acquisition, would be Carlos Correa. And don't get me wrong, I do agree with you, Adam, that they are going to need to bolster pitching, as every playoff contending team does every year. I just would love to see that superstar shortstop for the last...
I'm marking this down. We're gonna deep dive this next Sunday on Long Toss, because I want some other opinions here. See what Baseball Jen and Owner's iPad have to say. Owner's iPad is Craig Ballard, for anybody who missed Sunday's episode. Inside joke. Welcome into the circle. Move Bo to second. Just temporarily. Ooh, I don't know how that would go over long term. I mean, I guess if you don't care about him being a Blue Jay for life, then yeah, that's a great idea. Let's piss him off and move him to second.
I mean, I don't get the feeling that Bo Bichette is that individualistic. I truly think that at this point in his career, if it's explained to him, you're moving right back to shortstop afterwards, or even flip Correa and Bo back and forth. Bo knows he's struggling at shortstop. He's not an idiot. He sees his numbers like everybody else does.
Yeah, I mean, we also brought in Marcus Semien, who was one of the top shortstops in the league, and said, don't worry, Bo, you're still our shortstop. Simeon's going to second.
Carlos Correa is different, man. Correa is different. He's like one of the best defensive shortstops in the whole league. How do you move him? Like, if you're going to go out and do something crazy, like bring him in at the deadline.
All right. Well,
you move Bo to second. Anyway, yes, okay. We can get into this on Long Toss.
We'll get into this on Long Toss. All right. Well, we're going to get roasted in the comments for even bringing that up. Some people are going to love this take, because I know there's a lot of concerns with Bo Bichette's glove and his fielding right now. A couple more errors over the weekend, but let's get off of Bo for a second. So next one comes in from Scott McCutcheon. Says, is all balls in every stadium being kept in a humidor now a thing, or am I remembering that wrong?
So yes, Scott, they are all being kept in a humidor, and I think that's one of the reasons why offense is down. Now, for the longest time, the humidor was always being used in Colorado because the altitude there is so much higher and the ball flies so much further that they were trying to reduce the distance the balls were being hit. But now they're using it in every stadium, and I don't truly understand why. I know you'd mentioned when we were going through this, Adam, that we'd kind of talk about exactly what a humidor is, and if you wanted to jump in there and just
That is not how I brought it up. What I said was, would you please explain to everyone? Because I don't know what a humidor is. Like, I know that's where you keep your cigars so they don't dry out and turn to shit. Not that I smoke.
But it's doing the same thing for the ball. So a drier ball is going to travel further. Yes.
So it moistens the ball, keeps it kind of damp. Maybe not damp. Maybe that's an exaggeration of the term, but you get the idea, right? Instead of being
damp
like
and moist, both are not the words to use, but yes.
Instead of being like a dried out, hardened, whatever, it's just got a little bit extra
juice, if you will.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, juice is not the right word, because we're not juicing the balls. It's the opposite of that. Man, why can we not think of the right words? Not moist, not damp, not juiced. Soggy. We've soggied the balls. All right.
Anyways, Scott, yes, the humidor is being used by all 30 teams, and that has been pointed at as one of the various reasons why offense is down this year.
So we saw a stat last week that showed that home run rate was down across the league, right? It was at like, I don't know if it was an all-time low necessarily, but definitely it's trending in the down direction. And now this was, thankfully, it did adjust for weather, which is always a big concern for me. Sarcasm. The universal DH, quality of player. Did it account for soggy balls is what I want to know. And how do we adjust for that? All right. I'm sorry. I'm beating that into the ground as a dead horse at this point. Stats are stupid, and that's my opinion. Give me the good old batting average, home runs, and RBIs, and I'm set. ERA, yeah, you got it. Wins are the most valuable stat for a pitcher, right? That's what we could determine.
Advanced metrics is really where Adam turns into an old man.
Man, I'm going to have a hard time watching Moneyball this week. anyways, I did come up with an alternative for WAR, wins above replacement. Maybe yes. I'll reveal that on a later episode, but it is ass. It is Adam's sliding scale of superiority. And it is just a series of emojis, Scott.
Okay.
Yeah, it's actually, I've got it right here. So if anybody wants to see it, it's pretty phenomenal.
That's his formula for ass.
This is my formula for ass. So I'll just give you a little peek here. We all know 8 is like MVP level WAR. So the equivalent on the ass scale is a peach emoji.
Right.
7 is still elite. That's the head explosion emoji. 5, that's still a wowzers level player. And that's like the shh emoji.
Okay.
4 is good. That's a thumbs up. 3 is solid. That's a fist bump. 2, that's your role player. So for me, that's a wizard emoji because anyway, and this is a stupid thing. Let's get back to the long toss. yeah, stats are stupid. And, yeah, Vladdy is on peach emoji pace. That's all I'll say.
Yes. Also, stats are not stupid. Moving on.
Also, they're stupid. So, Stubby Clap beat up Pete Alonso today. This comment comes in from a few days ago from Plastic Pellets.
Yeah.
Do you want to talk about Pete Alonso and that whole, like, benches clearing brawl and Stubby Clap tackled him to the ground?
Old man Clap getting involved. I love Canadian to see hero. It, man. Of course, he is the first base coach for the St. Louis Cardinals. He came on the show and talked Canadian baseball and his trip through professional ball and getting to the point where he is, you know, being interviewed for management positions around the league. And he's currently, again, looking after that first base coaching position with the St. Louis Cardinals. No, it was kind of an impressive thing to see. If you haven't watched it yet, definitely YouTube it because the Mets and the Cardinals a few days back got into it. Bench is cleared. Alonso got a little frisky and Klopp took him down.
The only thing that was missing from that is I kind of wanted after the fight was over, I wanted Stubby Klopp to stand up and do a backflip.
Yes.
He doesn't do that anymore.
He has stopped doing that. He said the last time he did it, he just about biffed it and was like, okay, I'm getting too old to backflip.
Man, a backflip is so much more impressive than a front flip. I don't know why, but it just is.
It just is. You can't tuck your neck.
Yeah, I can't tuck your neck.
In a backflip.
St. Louis Cardinals team, I think they're going to do some damage this year in the NL.
I think so too, and I think that they're pretty motivated to do so with that trio of vets with Molina and Pujols and Wainwright.
Yeah, I forgot they had Pujols this year. That is quite the veteran core.
Yeah.
And then, of course, they have the Canadian slugger. What's his name?
O'Neill.
Tyler O'Neill. Tyler. Yes, thank you. Man, have you seen pictures of that kid with his shirt off? He is jacked. Like, he looks like steroid era jacked. He's got some Espinal's special diet going on for him. Anyways, I digress. That is not the podcast we're on right now. Let's move on, shall we, before I get fluttered here about Tyler O'Neill with his shirt off.
Yes, before you start telling us the emoji that you wrote.
Let me tell you, it's a totally different scale we're giving for Tyler O'Neill. Eggplant emoji for sure. Well, so Steve Williams comes in from YouTube here and says, when is Charlie Montoyo's going to stop putting in Bradley Zimmer? By the way, it's Montoyo. But I think all of our comments here about Charlie, Papa Charlie, referred to him as Montoya. But mm-hmm. that also might be like an iPhone autocorrect, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, it is Montoya.
We'll give everyone the benefit of the doubt that it is autocorrecting to Montoya, but it is yes. Montoyo.
So Montoyo, when is Montoyo going to stop putting in Bradley Zimmer? Bradley Zimmer strikes out way too much. It's been so disappointing so far. He could hardly make contact with the baseball. Scott, go ahead.
Well, this is Bradley Zimmer to a T. This is who they acquired when they went out and traded Anthony Castro to the Cleveland Guardians. He's a glove-first guy. He's a guy that you want on the bench, more playing in AAA. He's a Band-Aid solution to when bad tacos hit. And listen, Teoscar Hernandez is getting very close to returning, and I think when we see Bradley Zimmer less, when we see Montoyo putting not Bradley Zimmer into that lineup, it will be because it's Teoscar Hernandez is being penciled in into that four hole, and this team will be back to where it was at the beginning of the season, which we're all excited for Teoscar to return, and the rumors seem like he should be back for this Guardian series starting on Friday, I think it is. So he's in AAA even right now, getting some in-game at-bats. So just we deal with Zimmer for a few more games, pretty much. It is what it is. This is a scenario that every single team in MLB deals with, needing to play a guy who's not an MLB player. Mm-hmm. In a position where there just aren't enough guys who are Major League Baseball players once guys start getting injured. It's just the way it is.
It is. I just want to put one thing in perspective, not for you, Scott, but just remind everyone that like the Blue Jays are second in the AL East. We're 15-9, so we're 6 games above 500. At the start of the season, we all knew, like, this is the meat grinder of the schedule. We were kind yes. of hopeful that, like, if we were right around 500, maybe a game or two above by the end of this, we'd be thrilled. We're 6 games above 500 right now.
Mm-hmm.
We have dealt with some injuries. Like, I would say 3 games a week, we've got our fourth and fifth outfielders mm-hmm. playing. Right, because Teoscar's out, so already we've got our fourth infielder in there. And then we're either giving Lourdes a day off or we're giving George a day off. So it's like Tapia and Zimmer plus either Lourdes or Springer. Like, yeah. we have not had a good outfield. And we're still 5 games above 500. Like, this team
six
is...
6 games. No, you're right. You're right. 100%, yes, man.
6 games.
It's...
So, when we're and all we are healthy playing... and we get past this rugged stretch of like 30 games in 30 days and we're into like, man, I think we're going to start putting the fucking boots to some of these teams.
Especially if you look at what we're dealing with over the last 15 games schedule-wise, right? Yeah. Like, you brought it up. It has been a tough schedule for the Blue Jays. We are currently playing the Yankees, who are in the middle of a 10-game winning streak because their schedule has been nice and soft. We're still only a couple games back of them. All in all, this has been a success to this point in the season.
Absolutely.
Here Tuesday, May 3rd. Now, how the rest of this grind of a schedule plays out, they do still have some pretty tough teams ahead of them here. A little bit of a break with the Guardians, but you can't count Cleveland out. They're still a good team, so... We'll see where we're at come around May 18th, I think, is when the schedule officially softens up. But
mm-hmm.
it's been a good start so far.
Great start to the year. We're happy there. All right, so next one comes in. Amology says, I said the same thing about Alek Manoah. After I saw him pitch at Yankee Stadium in his MLB debut, I was like, this guy is special. And I am also still not a fan of Montoyo.
Yeah, that's fair. And... we talk about Alek Manoah every single time we turn the mic on. I mean, agreed, Amology. Yeah, he's absolutely awesome. He's starting tonight, looking to end that Yankees win streak, and there's not a guy in this starting staff that I would rather see take the mound. So,
Manoah versus Yankees, that's appointment viewing. And
yeah, isn't it?
Got to catch this game tonight. You and which, I, by the way, live
yeah,
streaming
live
tonight's
streaming
game.
It.
So we're going to be live yes. on YouTube. Come hang out, chat with us. Gonna be a good time. Yeah, hell or high water, this is going to be one heck of a game. So I'm really looking forward to it. All right, next one comes in from Jaywalk Jays Talk on Twitter. So they DM'd us and said, "Guys, I'm in an absolute war on Twitter with Yankees fan who has been constantly disrespecting Jordan Romano, a.k.a. the Markham Madman, saying things like Michael King was robbed for reliever of the month in April. He's also been saying that the MLB is constantly sucking the Blue Jays' nest." I had to censor that. "And are the darling of the league who can do no wrong." Scott, where do we begin? There's a lot to dissect here.
A lot to dissect there. Number one, can you imagine a Yankees fan complaining that the Jays are getting too much attention from the league? Like, that is the funniest part of this whole thing, is that he thinks that the Jays are getting special treatment from the fucking MLB. Like, oh my goodness. Just so funny, man. Also, what is it? Jays walk, Jays talk?
Yeah.
You're not in a war on Twitter. You're in an argument. War might be a strong word there.
Especially this time of year. With everything that's going on in the world. But
So there's a few things about this. I did love that I got a DM from him about this, because like I was messaging with him and he was just like so worked up. But I did look into the numbers. Okay, so Michael King, he is more or less a long reliever out of the Yankees bullpen. He comes in low leverage situations, or when they are being blowing out, maybe not blowing out, but you know, he's not coming in high leverage situations. And Michael King has actually been an incredible reliever for the Yankees this year. Through 14.2 innings, he's got a 0.61 ERA. He's got a 1.1 wins above replacement. Jordan Romano, on the other hand, has a 12.1 innings pitched, 1.46 ERA, and a 0.4 wins above replacement. Now, what I love about these stats, and these are the stats that the Yankees fan had pulled up and was just like, Michael King gets robbed. Notice that there is no mention of saves. 11 saves in 12 opportunities. That is absolutely insane. And he is playing in the most high leverage situations possible with games on the line.
We've against good teams.
Against very good teams. And we already talked about this, right? The Jays are 9-2 in one run games. And that is all on the shoulders of the Markham Madman, Jordan Romano, who has been lights out in the ninth inning with the game on the line. So Jays walk, Jays talk. You can literally tell that Yankee fan to just shove it up his butt, because he doesn't know what he's talking about. It's like if we were to go through Trent Thornton's numbers before he kind of got blown up there last week, right? And we're just like, Trent Thornton has a 0.6 wins above replacement. How is he not the reliever of the month? Well, he's not the reliever of the month because he's pitching when the Jays are already down and their starting pitching gets blown up, right? Like, it's a completely different scenario, and the fact that Jordan Romano has 11 saves in the month of April, I mean, come on.
Yeah. Romano has been
I started to get worked up there.
I could see. I mean, war does that to a guy.
Yeah, war does that to a guy.
All right. How are you feeling about, just to pivot slightly here, Scott? About old Yimmy Garcia. He blew another one for us.
Yeah. I think after last night's game, he probably slides down the depth chart in that bullpen. I think we're at the point now where Michael Phelps has shown enough that he's going to be that high leverage guy in that situation at this point. I think Yimmy Garcia is an excellent pitcher, and relievers go through the ups and downs of a season like everybody else, and he's definitely the coldest reliever currently in that high leverage situation. So I think we're going to watch Montoyo go more to Phelps, go more to Meza in that eighth inning rather than leaning on Garcia. That said, they're playing the Yankees. They're a damn good team, and that middle of that Yankee order is a bit of a meat grinder. And to lose 3-2 to a team on a 10-game winning streak, I mean, it sucked. Believe me, I'm still hungover. But
yeah, I mean, it was a stripling start, so it was. We knew it was going to be a partial bullpen day, and we kept it close. It's too bad that things went the way they did in the end. Yep. Alek Manoah tonight, got to be a win for this Blue Jays team. And then, do you know who we got tomorrow? Is it Kikuchi tomorrow?
It is Kikuchi tomorrow.
Against Nestor Cortez?
Yes.
That's going to be a tough one. It's really going to be tough to take two out of three against the Yankees. So definitely, I do not want to get swept by this Yankees team because, man, you thought Michael King was annoying before? Holy, if they sweep the Blue Jays, they're going to be crowning themselves World Series champions already. So, man, we need Alek Manoah and this Blue Jays team to win tonight. This is this is as close to a must-win game as we've seen so far this year.
I mean, the truth is there's no such thing as must-win games right at this moment. It's especially when you're six games. Yeah, when you're six games above
emotionally, Scott. But emotionally it's must-win, okay?
I'm with you.
I'm not saying if we lose that we should like trade Vladdy or anything. All right. Couple more to get to here.
And I get then, the sentiment. Yes.
We'll be out of here. So this one comes in from A Smoke and a Pancake. Tweeted us and said, holy shite, the White Sox just signed Rafael Dolis, former Blue Jay, to a minor league contract. Is it wrong that I actually hope he does well?
No, it's not wrong. I wish Rafael Dolis all the best. He was actually very valuable to the Toronto Blue Jays in 2020. Last year, he definitely unraveled.
Yeah.
We see this all the time with relievers, where a reliever will completely unravel, will build himself back up, be picked up by another organization, be given an opportunity after somebody has to deal with bad tacos, comes out of nowhere and looks amazing. Listen, Rafael Dolis also got a bit of a bad hand from the Blue Jays last year because he was kind of thrust into a role that he had no business being in, right? He was all of a sudden the Toronto Blue Jays closer after they watched guy after guy after guy go down in that bullpen, and he should not be a closer. He is not a high-leverage ninth-inning guy. All the best to him with the White Sox. I really kind of feel the same way as a smoke and a pancake. God, I love some of these Twitter handles.
I mean, with Dolis, and like you said, with these relievers, and sometimes they just seem to unravel. I really think that a lot of that has to do with just like, if they do get blown up, it's so hard for them to bring those numbers back down to something respectable. Yes. I mean, we talked to Mark Rypchinski, former Blue Jay, World Series champ, lefty specialist, and that maybe cost him his career. But what he kept talking about was that it really got in his head because he would, I mean, this is back in the day when you could bring a guy in for one batter, right? So he'd come in, face the lefty, get him out. And then once the league mandated a three-hitter rule, so he had to pitch against three guys, and he wasn't able to do it where he'd pitch against two lefties and then the righty would hit a double. And by the time he got an opportunity to face a righty again, he already had that kind of in the back of his mind that like, man, I've got to get this guy out because it's going to take me 5 weeks to bring my stats down where I'm like pitching immaculate against righties. Because right now I have this big glaring stat line against righties, you know, they're hitting 500 against me and blah, blah, blah. So I just think that's a big factor with relievers.
A mental battle. Yeah.
And the starting pitchers don't see it. Because, like, I'm just looking at Jose Berríos' stats right now. I mean, he doesn't have a spectacular stat line at this point. But after pitching a third of an inning on opening day and having an ERA of, I think it was like 118 after that day, his ERA is down to around 4 right now.
Yeah.
3 or 4 starts later, right? Like, you go out, every 5 days, you have a chance to go out, pitch 5 or 6 innings and really diminish the glaring, ugly start that happened at the start on opening day. So,
well, I don't remember who Hey Commie was talking about. Of course, our good friend Joel, friend of the show, always on Long Toss, our Iron Man, I should say. Absolutely, our Cal Ripken Jr. he was bringing up, and I wish I could remember the name of the player, but he was just talking about how he doesn't want his batting average on the Jumbotron. He wants
Max Muncy.
Yes, Max Muncy. That's it. Yes, that he only wants his on-base percentage up there. And it's just like, because it is, it's a mental screw game, right? You see it up there, and it takes so long when you're really struggling to bring it back up. And the same thing works with pitchers and their ERAs, or bring it back down. And yeah, so all the best to Rafael Dolis, I guess, is how this breaks down. And
we'll
move on from there.
I was tempted to ask Danny Jansen about that, because obviously he's on the IL right now. But how much better it feels to be on the IL when he looks at his current stats for the season, and it's like, oh yeah, I'm pretty good at baseball, you know?
Yeah.
Versus like the start that he had to last season, where I think his batting average was below 100.
Yes.
Well into May.
Yes.
Right? And just, obviously, I didn't want to get into that kind of dark cloud with him on his first appearance. But, it's tough when you slump to start the year. That's for sure.
This is why baseball is such a unique sport.
Yeah.
It's a grind, 162 games. And it's really funny. If you look at Danny Jansen's numbers by the end of the year, he technically was an above average offensive catcher. But who would have guessed that May 15th? Not a single one of us. So you got to play them all.
Very, very weird. All right, one more to get to, and then we're out of here. So this one comes in from Canadian Dan on Discord. Said, why did Montoya, take Stripling out so soon? He was only at like 63 pitches, with 47 of them being strikes. Now, I don't have the luxury of watching the game live like you guys maybe had. Of course, he's in China watching the games on replay. But it seems to me that if they are going to continue to give him a spot in the rotation, that they need to start letting him pitch longer into the game. He seemed to be doing fine in the game last night, and I was surprised that he got the hook so early last night. Am I wrong or what?
I don't know if he's wrong. As much as Ross Stripling's leash to go a third time through the batting order, I think, is the shortest of all of our starting pitchers. His numbers are by far the worst the third time through the order, and I think that's just something that Charlie is well aware of. I also do think that Ross got hit pretty hard in the fourth inning, and although they wound up getting out of it without allowing a run, the writing was on the wall that they were figuring out Stripling, and just figured that they would go, especially with the game so tight, and you know the Yankees are on this win streak, and you're trying to grind out a win. It is what it is. I don't really... This is not a move Charlie made that I'm like, Montoya, right? It's just like, okay, it's, you got through four innings. He did what he had to do. He was only at 63 pitches. I do think that Ross Stripling is going to need to kind of get to the point with this starting rotation where he is pitching 85, 90 pitches.
I
wasn't upset with it.
I wasn't upset with it either, but I'll step in on this and just say that, like, I still don't think Stripling is, not that he's not trusted to go longer, and like all the hard hits and stuff that came in the fourth, like I agree with you. But I do think that there's like part of it is just like he's not fully stretched out yet.
Yes.
Like he went through spring training expecting to be a reliever. So he went through that kind of development different than a starting pitcher would. Mm-hmm. Right. So he is like 3 weeks behind these guys who are throwing 80, 90, 100 pitches.
100 pitches.
Do we want to see him get hurt or strain his elbow because we left him in for that fifth inning? Like, how fucked would we be without Ross Stripling right now? Like, honestly, like that would be. Yeah. That would be devastating to us at this point to not have Stripling, which is a weird sentence to even say. But like, you know, if Manoah's out there and has the exact same pitching performance, I think we're still rolling him back out for the fifth, even if it is the same score in the game, it's the same pitch count, it's the same inning, it's the same part of the order coming up. We're still rolling Manoah back out. We're still rolling, you know, Gausman, Berríos back out. But with Stripling, I don't necessarily think that it's entirely a confidence and whatever issue. I do think a lot of it just has to do with, like, 70 pitches might be his pitch limit right now still. Like,
yeah.
You know, so it is what it is with Ross Stripling. Very impressed with him. It was Stripling that had his 100%. Little freak out last year, wasn't it?
Yes.
What a 180 he has done in terms of just like being a team guy.
100%.
After that meltdown. And I think he was embarrassed by that. I don't exactly remember what he was flipping out about. Was it an error that happened?
Yeah, I forget. I he reamed out Biggio or something like that. I don't even remember. I do just remember him.
I just remember him having that meltdown and everybody being like, whoa, dude, like fucking calm down, right? But I mean,
he wasn't alone. No, he wasn't alone. Remember Steven Matz had his freak out there where he beat the crap out of that bottle, that jug of water or whatever? Like,
but I just want to like a little tip of the cap to Ross Stripling because he is... It feels like totally bought into whatever the team needs. I will just do it. Like, it feels like, you know,
no,
a lot of times when you ask for like a weird, someone to step in and play third because they're not good at third, but you need someone to play third, and it fucking sure makes Kevin Biggio look stupid, but he does it right. And like, sometimes you get a guy to move to the bullpen or to move to the rotation, not because it's in their best interest, but because it's in your best interest out of desperation. Mm-hmm. And he's fucking done it. And I love his attitude this year. And I'm super thrilled with Ross Stripling. So
I second that. Hear, hear.
All right, man.
All right.
We'll wrap see it you up tonight. Here. Yeah, let's wrap it up. We'll see you for live stream. Alek Manoah versus the Yankees tonight.
You can follow us on Twitter at Walk Off Podcast, on Instagram, The Walk Off Podcast. Please hit subscribe, like the video. All of that good stuff is always appreciated because it does help with the algorithm. We'll see you all tonight, 5 o'clock, Mountain Time, 7 Eastern.
Cheers.
Thanks for listening to the Walk Off Podcast with Scott Belford and Adam Mack, with a new episode every Friday.
Oh! Osborne with a drive. Cheese and crackers. Shows to pitch to him. Long move.
Thanks for listening.